This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Start spreading the news. I'm leaving today. I want to be part of it. New York, New York. These vagabond shoes are longing to stray right through the very heart of it. New York, New York. I want to wake up in a city that doesn't sleep and find I'm king of the hill, top of the heap.
Oh yeah, that was a special song dedicated to the fine administration of New York as it welcomes the illegal immigrants from Texas. Ed wanted us to play that song. I thought that's very respectful. They'll be spreading as they get off the bus there. I wonder if they're singing New York, New York, you know, sort of with a Hispanic accent. Yeah. Well, anyway, good morning and welcome to Freedom Works, the Paul Molloy Show. I am Paul Molloy, and along with my buddy and my partner, Big Ed Davis, we thank you. It is Friday, August the 5th, as we move along through the summer, and we have a lot going on today. In a few minutes, Weifeng Zhang from George Mason University's Mercatus Center is going to join us. We're going to talk about Nancy Pelosi's Taiwan trip and how it shows the Chinese who's really boss. They're very upset. We're going to talk about it. And is Joe Manchin having second thoughts about backing the Democrats' so-called Inflation Reduction Act? Have you noticed the little beads of perspiration on his forehead now as he talks about it? And what about the enigmatic Kyrsten Sinema? Where does she stand on this? We're going to take a look a little bit later in the show. And did you see Florida Governor Ron DeSantis? He had a big story, didn't he, yesterday, for those of you that follow him? He has suspended Hillsborough County's state's attorney for refusing to enforce certain laws, most of them having to do with either gay rights or transgender policies or abortion. So we're going to take a look at that as well. And in our ultimate top 10, we have a good one. The top 10 oldest living musicians. Oldest living musicians. Let's see if Ed knows who's number one. I knew right away, Ed, who the oldest one was. We'll see if Ed knows. He fancies himself a musicologist. All right, we got a lot to go on the show today. One of the things, did you see the jobs numbers? Hiring in July was actually far better than they thought it would be. It's really good news. 528,000, did I read that right? Yeah, 528,000 non-farm payroll jobs. That's a lot. That's a lot more than they thought. The unemployment rate, it's at 3.5%. You know, that's not that bad. However, there are more than 3.5% of the population unemployed. Let's be honest for a second about unemployment. When people drop out of the labor market and no longer file for unemployment benefits because they've just given up or their unemployment benefits have run out and they have not gotten a new job, they are no longer showing on the unemployment rate. So it's never as low as you see it there. 3.5% is not true. Now, the administration will tout that number, and they know it's not true. There are jobs. Here's the thing. People don't want those jobs. Let's be honest. Or they're tough jobs. But look, you know as well as I do that if it says now hiring and nobody's showing up, it's because they don't want the jobs. There are people that need work. There are people that need work. And maybe Ed, maybe in some cases, the guy that's hiring is very particular and he just hasn't found the right person. But I think most of the time, you're talking about like service jobs, aren't you? Right, and it's usually like in a restaurant or it's in a retail store or, oh, I agree with you. Yeah, I remember you there. You were a bag man. You were a bag man. Did you really? Were you stealing apples? But you're such a nice guy. I don't understand them. All right. Anyway, so the numbers are excellent. 528,000 non-farm payroll jobs for July. Let's just remember that. Wage growth also went higher. The average hourly earning rate for somebody jumped 0.5% in July. And that's over 5% better from a year ago. So you're making 5% more right now than you were last year. However, keep in mind the inflation rate is over 8%. Actually, it's probably closer to 10%. So in the long run, you are losing money. And that's true as well. Now, markets initially went down based on that report. But I don't know why. By the way, leisure and hospitality, they did very well. And leisure and hospitality are big here in Florida. Job gains of 96,000. So that's pretty good. So anyway, I imagine that they'll wheel Biden out to talk about how good these job numbers are down the road or fairly soon. He's been sick. He's been in hibernation, isolation, and in vindication. I thought that Biden was going to be the healer. Do you remember how big a deal he said after Trump, how he was going to be a healer? He's been nothing but divisive. I don't remember. You're probably right, and I don't remember. Whether or not you got to remember that Trump got that vaccine going and they had Operation Warp Speed and he got that thing out and he got that out quickly. Nobody can say he didn't do a quick job of getting it out. He lit a fire under those pharmaceutical companies. He really did. He did a very good job. We got so much going on. We're going to talk a little bit later about Ron DeSantis. We're going to talk about Joe Manchin. We're going to talk about Kyrsten Sinema. But first, we're going to talk about that trip that Nancy Pelosi took to Taiwan and the repercussions thereof. Let us take our break, and when we come back, we will discuss that topic with Weifang Zong from the Mercatus Center.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Listen to the latest pet trends with benefits on the Pet Buzz every Saturday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. Join pet trendologist Charlotte Reed and veterinarian Dr. Michael Fleck as they talk all things pets, from animal health and wellness, money-saving tips, celebrity gossip, breaking news, and more. Their expert guests are in the know and in the now. To learn more about this unique program and its hosts, tune into the show on the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Caregivers find the support they need on Connecting Caregivers Radio with Linda Burhans, the gal who cares for the caregiver. Heard every Friday from 1 to 2 p.m., Linda and her caring and knowledgeable guests will bring you education, information, and resources, as well as a shoulder for caregivers. That's Connecting Caregivers Radio with Linda Burhans, the gal who cares for the caregiver, where you can find help and hope every Friday from 1 to 2 p.m. right here on the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hey, we are back on a Friday, and we thank you so very much for being with us here on Freedom Works. So China announced sanctions today against Nancy Pelosi. Now, she's already out of the area. She's back home. But they announced sanctions against both her and her family following her Taiwan visit, which, by the way, the mainland Chinese government has strongly condemned. A foreign minister spokesman announced the sanctions today. She's calling Pelosi's visit, quote, an egregious provocation and a gross interference into the country's internal affairs. Here is more about that. They said, in disregard of China's grave concerns and firm opposition, Pelosi insisted on visiting China's Taiwan region. This constitutes a gross interference in China's internal affairs. It gravely undermines China's sovereignty and territorial integrity, seriously tramples on the One China principle, and severely threatens peace and stability across the Taiwan Strait. Now, here's my question. One person lands in Taiwan to say hello to the leaders there, and the whole mainland China falls apart? What is going on here? Well, we have Wai Fang Zong, our friend who from the Mercatus Center, senior research fellow there, back with us to talk a little bit about the Nancy Taiwan visit. Wai Fang, welcome back to FreedomWorks.
Thanks for having me again, Paul.
Oh, it's always our pleasure. You know so much about what's going on in the Asian sector of our world. So tell me, personally, I'm not a Nancy Pelosi fan. I'll be honest with you. I think about 90% of everything she does I disagree with politically. But I was cheering her on when she went to Taiwan. I did not think she would go. I really didn't. I think she had some moxie. Your thought on that?
I thought she would go. I actually thought she would go even when President Biden came out to say that the DOD thought it was not a good idea. Even at that moment, I still thought she would go for the reason that not only because I think she was the first U.S. leader to visit Tiananmen Square after the massacre in 1989. We may not agree with all the other policies that she, you know, advocated for, but I think on freedom and democracy overseas, she always has been pretty strong. And the interesting thing, actually, at the beginning of this conflict, when President Biden came out to say that's not a good idea, I never for a minute thought it would become anything substantial in terms of a military conflict, because the fact that the president said it was not a good idea pretty much made it so that she now had to go. And because now she had to go, the Chinese had to put out some, you know, harsh words. But everything would be just for show, and then the whole thing would be over in a week. And looks like it ended up just like that.
Well, then you're a better prognosticator than I am. First of all, I did not know how she was going to get in. I mean, here's this plane flying in, and you got all of these, I don't know, Chinese military things all over the place. They're launching missile tests, and they've got, you know, they got their boats, and I'm sure they got planes in the air. And here's this little plane coming along. The only thought I wondered about was, did she have like an escort, a plane escort, you know, for her plane, or how did that work?
So in the old days, you would need to ask a military expert for an answer to the question.
I know.
The amazing internet now actually allows people to actually watch frame by frame, minute by minute, where her plane is, where her plane was, flying toward Taiwan, and all these other military aircraft the U.S. Have been standing around in the region as well. So apparently there were U.S. military aircraft nearby. I don't know whether their tasks were specifically to prevent anything bad happening to the speaker, but at least they were nearby. And I thought that was a very good show of force already from the U.S. side.
Yeah, I absolutely do. I mean, I'll be honest with you. If I was Nancy Pelosi, I don't think I would have done that. And it was strictly from a selfish point of view. I would be afraid that there were enough crazies in the government of China to knock the plane out of the air, especially with what I think is a rather weak Joe Biden. But I then thought about the implications of that, and it would not look good for China to knock the one of the most powerful politicians in Washington out of the air. So who knows? Anyway, let us get to the meat and potatoes of the visit itself, Weifeng. And you have said that her trip has reminded the world who the global superpower really is. Would you explain that a little bit?
Yeah, I thought that was a great demonstration of the U.S. power overseas, for the reason that when the speaker decided to go, even though the DOD thought it was not a good idea, they still put out all the resources needed to protect her. And the fact that she went and left and nothing really happened except a few Chinese missiles going into the water. And so the Chinese did not really.
I don't know. It's funny, the visual on that one. Go ahead.
Right. So, I mean, we can even see that from what Chinese people are saying on the social media, the Chinese social media. Many of them are complaining about the Chinese government, saying all these harsh words, but then never really managed to do anything.
Right. They saber rattled.
Exactly. So that's already a show of force and a good exercise for the United States.
Now, Weifeng, are there any long-term implications from this? Other than we showed them who's boss for a moment. Is it going to, down the long road, is it going to make any difference one way or the other with our relationship with China?
Certainly somewhat, because, I mean, during this trip, the people like to talk about the previous visit by the House Speaker, former Speaker Newt Gingrich, in 1997. And so it's the same level of U.S. officials going to Taiwan. The tensions were high then as well. But I think the world has changed now since 25 years ago, because, you know, now the undertone of the U.S.-China relations is something, you know, borderline Cold War. And some might even think that it's already started a new Cold War. But yep. If you look back at 1997, the undertone was all like, you know, the end of history, everything will be beautiful, China will become a democracy pretty soon. So I think the tensions between U.S. and China are totally different now, and it would add to the strain in the relations between the two countries. But I would also say, though, that even without this visit, the U.S.-China relations are not improving anyway.
Mm-hmm.
It's not. I think on the margin, it would create perhaps more tensions, more persistent tensions down the road a little bit. But the big picture still is that we are not engaged in that kind of romantic interactions with China like we did 20 years ago.
We're talking with Weifeng Zhang. He is a senior research fellow at the Mercatus Center at George Mason University. And we're talking about Nancy Pelosi's Taiwan visit and its future implications. Now, I don't know if Joe Biden and Nancy Pelosi were talking about this trip before she went, and that everything that he did when he came out to say things like not recommended that she go was staged. But do you think that among the Democrats that Biden did not know that Nancy planned to go to Taiwan when she made her Asia visit?
Yeah, it's a little bit hard to believe, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
A more convoluted interpretation of that entire, you know, back and forth between the president and the speaker might be that, imagine an alternative scenario, right? If President Biden came out to say that we stand firmly behind the speaker's decision, that's a great idea, that would look pretty provocative in Beijing's eye. So it might be a way of cooling it down.
It cooled it down, yeah. If he had said, boy, we're glad she's going, that would be a more direct slap in the face, because here's the president himself, you know, saying, that a girl, you go, girl, you know, or something like that. But he didn't. It makes her look tough. In a way, it made Biden look weak. Now, there are people, and I'm listening to people on both sides talking about, but I think a lot of Republicans are patting Nancy Pelosi on the back for this and saying, you know what? This was a good idea. Let me ask you this, Weifang. The Taiwan situation has been with us ever since the end of World War II, really. That island has never wanted to be a part of China. I remember as a young boy listening to the Nixon-Kennedy debates in 1960 talking about Taiwan. It seemed to me back then the United States had made a stronger military commitment to protecting Taiwan than it does today. Now we're, you know, we're quick to say, yeah, Nancy went over there, but we still believe in a one China policy. Have we weakened our resolve to protect Taiwan?
I think substantively, yes, to some extent. But the U.S. relation with Taiwan did have changed over the years because of China's economic reforms, which presented a different, totally different calculation for Americans. Because, you know, it used to be, if you look back to far enough back to the 1960s, for example, right? So that was one of the Taiwan Strait crises when, you know, it was under Mao's regime and he wanted to test the resolve of the U.S. Power. And so he decided to bomb one of those smaller islands off of Taiwan. And that was at the time when the United States had a defense treaty with the Republic of China, which is Taiwan today. Mm-hmm. And so the U.S. pretty much was obligated to defend Taiwan at the time. And what ended up happening was the USS Midway, a aircraft carrier now parked in San Diego. But at the time, it was in service. And the U.S. just basically sent the aircraft carrier to Taiwan and basically stared down the communists at the time. And so I would say, I mean, compared to that time, the U.S. Posture toward standing with Taiwan was much stronger than
right.
today. But if we are at this situation purely because in the year 2000, when China joined the WTO, you know, Americans realized that, you know, there's a huge market, lots of money to be made, and a lot of corporate interest supporting a more romantic version of the relations with China. And so the one China policy you referenced was basically saying that we recognize there's only one China, but, you know, there's different way of interpretation of that. Taiwan thinks that the one China means the Republic of China that includes the mainland. The mainland thinks that it's the People's Republic of China that includes Taiwan. So the U.S. was recognizing there's a difference in how the two sides interpret it, but let's let this go, wave our hands a little bit, and make the money. That was the calculation 20 years ago.
Why do you think mainland China seems so possessive of Taiwan? Is it sort of like if we allow Taiwan to be independent, everything else around Taiwan is going to start breaking independent as well, and they've got to hold on to it from a psychological standpoint? Or are there other reasons?
There's a reason in terms of the legitimacy of the Communist Party, and I say that from the perspective of the analysis I've done on Chinese propaganda. And over the years, what we have seen is that Taiwan presents a difficult challenge to the communist narrative, which basically goes by saying that, you know, democracy is not for the Chinese people, you know, we have different culture. We need a Chinese version of democracy, which is not democracy.
Right.
But the narrative runs into a roadblock when you talk about Taiwan, because ethnically they're Chinese people, they have democracy, they have excellent economic growth, and they have the semiconductor, all these high-tech industries. And so how do you reconcile the fact that they are Chinese, but they can have democracy just like Westerners, right? So that's a problem that the Chinese cannot really quite tolerate or explain themselves. So that's where I think Taiwan is a problem, much bigger problem compared to Hong Kong, because Hong Kong did not even have democracy, but Taiwan does, and it has been operating quite well.
Independent, too, because although Hong Kong was pretty much in the hands of the British for a long time.
Right. So what the British did give Hong Kongers people in Hong Kong was economic freedom.
Yeah.
Not so much as political freedom, but at least economic freedom.
They were. Now, what percentage of Taiwanese really want to remain independent? Do they have a faction in Taiwan that would like to be connected to mainland China?
Oh, yes, very much so, especially when the Chinese economy was doing well. And so if you look back at the Taiwanese administration when the Kuomintang was in office, so we have seen, even after democracy in Taiwan, former President Ma Ying-jeou was the previous Taiwanese president, who was quite pro-mainland and purely for the more commercial reason. But as time goes by, though, the Taiwanese generations are getting younger and younger, and many of them now are born after Taiwan was separated from mainland. And so they had no memory of, you know, what it was like under the people's...
So it's virtually, the new generations are pretty much used to being independent, and they would not take kindly... to a takeover. The other thing I'm wondering about is the mainland China has no way of blocking internet that Taiwan uses. In other words, can the people of Taiwan get complete access to the, to free, the world's, what the world is doing and thinking?
Not in terms of how the Chinese government controls the internet in the mainland. But I would not say...
Does it affect Taiwan?
It does not. So it does not control Taiwan. But bear in mind, however, that Taiwan's connection on the internet to the rest of the world is really coming down to several what we call the undersea cable landing stations that make landfall in just a few locations.
Oh.
And Taiwan basically is connected through those cables, and that would be susceptible to in a military conflict for destruction.
Oh, okay, that's interesting. I was thinking they could just pluck it out of a satellite from the air, you know. But I'm not a techie on that. But so, in other words, there is the threat from mainland China that they could, in effect, they could censor the internet if they really wanted to do so.
Right. So technically, you know, a strike at those submarine cable landing stations would take Taiwan off the grid for at least days. And something like that, you know, happens accidentally before in other countries when, you know, a submarine cable is cut under the ocean. Sometimes it's by anchors of ships or bitten by sharks. It could happen in many different ways. And some countries are out of internet for days for simple reasons, even unintentionally.
Finally, Wai Fang, let me ask you this. In 5 years from now, do you think mainland China will have taken over Taiwan?
I think it's likely in terms of military capabilities. I think the U.S. military leaders estimated that the timeline is probably about 2028, 6 years from now, in terms of readiness, like whether China has the capacity to actually do that. But readiness doesn't really explain all the conflict, right? In history, we have seen many wars where parties are not ready at all, but they got into that anyway. And miscalculations can certainly do that. So I think in terms of readiness, China might be there in a few years, but anything can happen in between, though.
Would Taiwan put up a military fight?
That's hard to say for the reason that, I mean, people didn't think the Ukrainians could put up such
an
excellent fight against the Russians. So it's hard to measure how willing a nation would stand strong against an invasion. So it's hard to gauge, but I think the sentiment in Taiwan seems to be high so far in terms of how tough they are.
Yeah, they may be watching how the Ukrainians are continuing to fight the good fight. Anyway, Wai Fang, it's always a pleasure to talk with you. I always learn a lot when we talk about
Thank you very much.
These things, of course, and I look forward to talking with you again down the road.
Thank you.
Yes, sir. Wai Fang's on. All right, we're going to take our break. When we come back, is Joe Manchin having some second thoughts about backing that so-called inflation Reduction Act. And what about Kyrsten Sinema? Where's she going on all of that? We're going to talk about it.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hey, this is Steve Vaccaro, psychologist and host of the Chapters Wrap Live. Each live show will bring on top-notch guests from the nonprofit world. We are the advocacy show that provides a platform for other advocates. So please tune in on your drive home from work to share your voice. The Chapters Wrap, where unity and diversity meet one chapter at a time.
Listen to Kicking Unhealthy Relationships to the Curb at 5, Voices for Change at 6, Reach Out with Ray and Steve at 7, and the Chapters Wrap at 8, Wednesdays, here on the Tantalk Radio Network.
What's the buzz in Tampa Bay? Senior Voice America Radio, a unique morning variety program delivering the latest commentary on politics by host and political analyst Tim Bryce and the up-to-minute happenings of Wall Street. Beyond politics and finance, they scale the scholar's rampart by including topics on religion and nutrition with thought-provoking guests and interviews. Tune in every weekday from 8 to 10 a.m. on this Tan Talk station. Senior Voice America, serving our nation's seasoned citizens for over four decades.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hey, back at you on a Friday. Freedom Works. Thank you for being with us. Well, I'm wondering if Joe Manchin is going to lose some weight over his tension by backing this so-called Inflation Reduction Act. It's not an inflation reduction. It's an inflation increase. You cannot spend more money and throw more money out there from the federal government. In other words, more money chasing fewer goods out there by the federal government, no matter how you're spending it, and not cause inflation. Throwing money at something doesn't increase its supply. It only increases the price because there are more dollars chasing fewer goods, and that's just simple economics. But Capitol Hill currently abuzz over how quickly Senator Joe Manchin, he's that Democrat, and we always look at him as the Democrat that has kept his thumb in the dike to keep the water from pouring into the city, right? He has fallen into a defensive posture over the backroom tax and spend climate deal that he kind of co-announced with our good friend, Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, last week. I'm sure, I don't know, if I was standing next to Chuck Schumer, Ed, I think I'd be holding onto my wallet. There's just something about that guy. I don't think I have to be very careful. Don't turn your back on him, you know?
Evidently, there was a little private dancing in the back room somewhere.
Yeah, I bet there was.
Uh-huh.
I bet there was.
And word got out, and now he's having to put this stuff back in the horse.
Yes. So Manchin has faced sharp criticism, including from his West Virginia constituents, by the way. They don't like it.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny. West Virginia is a very red state.
Yeah.
Joe Manchin, give him credit, he's a Democrat. How does a Democrat stay afloat in West Virginia? Well, you act like a Republican, that's how.
It was all about a pipeline, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, and the coal. You know, he's a big supporter, obviously, of the coal.
Well, you have to be up there.
So he's been clearly defensive in his interviews, and West Virginia is taking him to task, one committee staffer is saying. Another aide, Senate aide, pointed to what they described as strips of sweat running down his forehead.
I hate when that happens.
It reminds me of, what was that movie where, I don't know how they did it, but there was a scene where this guy, talk about flop sweat. I mean, it was like he was in a shower.
Yeah.
It was coming out from under his hat or something.
It was like something like an airplane movie or something like that.
Yes, it was. So it's called flop sweat. Are we to presuppose that Senator Manchin is going through a flop sweat experience right now with all of this?
That's embarrassing.
It's very embarrassing. Okay. Now that leaves Kyrsten Sinema. She's the only holdout on this Inflation Reduction Act. What a joke. What a name. Kyrsten Sinema said yesterday that she is going to support it. Made my heart sink. She said that she got them to agree to cut some of the fat out of this thing. She said, we've agreed to remove the carried interest tax provision and protect advanced manufacturing and boost our clean energy economy. That's what she said. She said, subject to the parliamentarian review, I'm going to move forward. So I think she's trying to protect some of these hedge fund people, from what I've been reading, from being overly taxed. In other words, they get a special tax based on the kind of service they perform. And Democrats wanted to get rid of that special privilege. And apparently Kyrsten Sinema said, if you do that, I will not vote for this. So they said, okay, that provision is gone. Don't worry about it, right? You know, she and Manchin are extremely powerful people. I would tell you, when it comes to legislation, they are more powerful right now than Nancy Pelosi. Or wow. Chuck. Well, sure. Because they can hold out. They can hold out. That people are used to them holding out. And that's what both of them are doing. But this is bad news overall. We don't want to see this act passed, Ed. I'm hoping maybe there's somebody else in the Democratic Party that nobody knows about that will vote against it. But I doubt it, which means we're going to have this stupid thing out there. It's not going to do anything for helping the climate, by the way. And it's certainly not going to do anything to help reduce inflation. And that's the truth. Here's something, too. Listen to this. Biden tweeted about how this Inflation Reduction Act will not raise your taxes. He insisted that the bill would not raise taxes on anybody in the middle class. That claim prompted a chorus of users accusing him of lying and pointing out exactly how the government spending bill would tax the middle class. Now, here's Biden's tweet. When we pass the Inflation Reduction Act, not a single American in the middle class will pay higher taxes. It's that simple. Well, economists like Heritage Foundation research fellow E.J. Antony, who we've had on the show, by the way, in years past, claim that the act will exacerbate Americans' inflation pain while simultaneously raising taxes. Here's Antony. He said, the proposed $433 billion price tag, most of which will be on climate provisions, will be passed through to the consumer at all different levels, not only in the purchase of energy itself, but because energy affects everything we do and everything we buy. You know, here's the other thing. When they say we're only going to tax the rich and we're only going to tax the corporations, think about it. What would you do if you ran a huge corporation and you are beholden to your stockholders and you are going to be raising, your taxes are going to be raised? What you will do is you will pass that cost on. You will not bite into it. It will be passed on. You will either reduce your number of employees to cover it, or you will raise the price of your product. That's what you will do. So that's the way everybody gets bitten by this thing. And nobody wants to think past their nose on it, especially the Democrats. They think they can talk you into believing that when they do this to the wealthy and they do this to these corporations, that's not going to affect you. It's going to directly affect you. It's just the way it is. All right.
First of all, do you think Biden knows how to tweet?
I don't. Is that what you were thinking while I'm telling you?
I was waiting for you to finish because I really don't. I don't buy that story from the Biden tweeted out. Him walking around the White House.
I don't think he knows how to type or tweet.
Whistling is not tweeting.
That's true.
I mean, I can just imagine him whistling and telling people he's tweeting.
Do you think, by the way, he can find his? Let me ask you this. You know the bedroom in the White House, wherever he sleeps. Okay. Do you think by himself he could find his way to the Oval Office, or would he get lost on the way?
He leaves breadcrumbs, I think. Trail of breadcrumbs.
I thought maybe a string. You could have a string on the floor, you know.
I saw that dog. He's got that one dog. The other one got the heck out of there.
Oh, did they get rid of it?
Oh, yeah. He bit. There's a second time he bit the Secret Service guy.
I wonder if he would bite Dr.
Commander's Joe Biden. Commander's the only one left.
Maybe they ought
to... I took a picture of him the other day.
Oh, okay. Well,
it said, who's really in charge? And it was...
It's the dog.
It's Commander.
Ah. All right. Let's take our final break. And when we come back, we got a lot of things going on, including we're going to talk about Ron DeSantis. He gets up there and he suspends the state's attorney from Hillsborough County. We're going to talk about that. Stay tuned.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Are you a writer, inventor? Do you have questions about your intellectual property rights? Well, tune in every Tuesday and Thursday morning at 11 o'clock for Joy on Paper. Once a month, I will have a special guest, the writer's legal eagle, Bill Larson of Larson & Larson, who can answer your questions. Protect your valuable work. Email me your questions to patsy.radio@gmail.com and then listen in every Tuesday and Thursday at 11 a.m. right here on Tampa Bay's Tantalk Radio Network. That's patsy.radio@gmail.com.
Hey, you new to the area or just want to know about the best hidden gems and upcoming events? Stay tuned. Be Local Buzz with Devin takes you to these places, introduces you to the best businesses, and tells you about upcoming buzz. Preset your radio to Tan Talk 1340 AM or 106.1 FM every Thursday from 4 to 5. That is the Be Local Buzz with Devin on Tan Talk 1340 AM and 106 FM every Thursday from 4 to 5. Looking forward to speaking with you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hey, we're back for the final segment of Freedom Works, and we thank you, really, we thank you deeply for joining us and listening to us. We are here, by the way, every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 10 to 11 a.m. Eastern Time on the Tantalk Radio Network. Now, we know 10 to 11, you're busy a lot of the time. So Ed, bless his heart, puts all of our shows on podcast. You can listen to them anytime. You can listen to them two or three times. Go to our website, ourfreedomworks.com, O-U-R, ourfreedomworks.com. Look for the podcast button at the top. You'll look at all our shows on that page. You'll see who the guest is and the top 10. Take your pick, ourfreedomworks.com. I also want to tip my hat to Senior Voice America. Great radio show. They precede our program, but they're on Monday through Friday, 8 to 10 a.m. with Tim Bryce and company. So give them a listen. You will be glad that you did. All right. So Ron DeSantis. Now, I wonder, Ed, if Governor DeSantis, our governor here in Florida, wants to kind of stay in the news and stay in front of the camera, relevant or whatever it is, maybe because he's running for governor, of course, and he needs needs that exposure. But he made a big deal. He gets on the TV and he has suspended Andrew Warren. He is the Hillsborough County State Attorney. Hillsborough County, by the way, right next door to us. We're in Pinellas County, across the bay. He suspended him yesterday for what he called neglect of duty, after Warren refused to enforce bans on abortion and transgender surgery. The transgender surgery involved kids.
Mm-hmm.
Involved kids. And we have laws now in this state that do not allow that kind of thing.
Laws are laws, aren't they?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well, if you read the Tampa Bay Pravda, this was a big deal. You ready? Protesters weathered a thunderstorm in Tampa Thursday night to protest Governor Ron DeSantis' removal of the county state attorney, Andrew Warren. More than 40 people sheltered from a downpour under the concrete overhang. 40 people.
40 people.
That's a bachelorette party, not a protest.
You can get them all into a large telephone booth. Well, of course, the weather didn't help them. But here's what DeSantis said about Andrew Warren. When you flagrantly violate your oath of office, when you make yourself above the law, you violated your duty. You've neglected your duty, and you're displaying a lack of competence to be able to perform those duties. He said it pretty strongly there, didn't he, about Andrew Warren. He said, and so today we are suspending State Attorney Andrew Warren, effective immediately. Now, Warren's a Democrat. He was first elected in 2016, and he's been, you know, he's been out there kind of like a renegade all this time, you know, but he forgets his job. His job is not to interpret the law. His job is to execute the law. His job is to execute the law. That's what his role is. Now, DeSantis, in suspending Warren, he said he would not sign a letter. Or he cited Warren's signing of a letter saying that he would not enforce prohibitions on sex change operations for minors. And another saying that he would not enforce, quote, any law related to protecting the right to life, unquote. I mean, you can't do that and be a state attorney. I don't care what your leanings and biases are. You got to follow the law. You got to do your job. And that's really all we have to say about that. Now, before we get to our top 10, we have a good one, Ed. I'm very interested to see if you know who the oldest living.
Well, can I have a partial hint here? Is it male or female?
Yes. It is male or female, okay. For sure, yeah. No,
well, you mean it's not gender X?
I didn't say that. I'm not sure I should give you that much of a hint. I'll give it to you. It does happen to be a male.
Okay.
All right. Now, before we get to it, seriously, I want to talk about Vin Scully. Vin Scully, I thought he'd be around forever.
Well, he was.
You know that guy has been broadcasting baseball since the Dodgers were in Brooklyn.
Mm-hmm.
He started in 1950, and I believe, I don't have the bio info in front of me, but he was 96 years old. Do you remember how old?
I think he was 94.
94 years old.
Yeah, he retired in 2018, I believe it was. Either 16, I think it was 16, I'm sorry. Spent the last, you know, 6-7 years of his life, and
he just was an amazing man. He was a great, eloquent broadcaster,
yep.
And he spent his entire career virtually with the Dodgers.
Yeah,
and you know he hated socialism. You know, he once made a public comment during a broadcast. I think they were sponsoring some game against, don't quote me on it, but a country like Nicaragua or something, mm-hmm. where socialism was rampant. And he talked about, just matter-of-factly, talked about how bad socialism was. He had a lot of courage. He really
did. Did he get fired?
He never got fired. Yeah. I don't think he ever got fired.
But today you couldn't do that.
No, you couldn't.
That's being insensitive to socialist people.
I'm sure you're right about that. Yeah, could you imagine somebody on ESPN?
No.
Going off on a tangent against socialists? I don't think we
would. Let me tell you something. If you are inspiring to be a broadcaster or journalist or anything like that, stick to the script.
Oh, yeah.
Don't give your opinion.
You know, just before we get to our top 10, I know it's going to make it hard, but Brittany Griner, she wouldn't.
Oh, boy.
She took a knee, or she wouldn't. She wouldn't.
Well, she stayed in the locker room.
Yeah,
she wouldn't come out for the national anthem.
And she wouldn't salute the flag or anything.
Hated
like
America.
That. Now, I want her to get out of there, but I hope she realizes how precious the United
States
is.
Well, here's the thing: we're going to trade a child with drugs, who insisted on taking her drugs, into a country that is known that you're not allowed to have drugs in, for an arms dealer.
Yeah, it would seem to me. They're
that's
getting
an
the
even
better
trade,
of the
deal, isn't it?
Yeah, Russia's getting the better of the deal.
Oh,
all right,
Lord.
Time to do our top 10. Top 10 oldest living musicians. Here we go. Number 10, Bob Dylan. Bob Dylan, 81 years old. Wow, no. Can't believe it. Number 9, Ringo.
Ringo.
Ringo Starr. I think he was the oldest Beatle. He is the oldest Beatle, 82. 82 years. Can you believe Ringo's 82 years old? Oh, my God. Number eight, Jerry Lee Lewis. He's still alive. He's 87 years old.
We have a couple of seconds here. Now, the movie that was made, remember that?
Yeah, I do. What's his name there? He did a good job playing him.
Anyway, I watched one of his documentaries of things you did may not have known about this movie. And do you know that Jerry Lee was on set during that, and he had a pistol in one pocket and a bottle of bourbon in the other?
No kidding.
And he would go through that and tell, what's his name, you're getting it wrong here, until he got it right.
I liked the movie. I thought it was a very good movie. Yeah. Okay, we got to rush through this. Number seven, Bobby Rush, 88 years old. Number six, Frankie Valli is 88 years old. Can you believe Frankie Valli? Number five, Petula Clark is 89 years old. Remember Downtown, the song Downtown?
Yep.
Number four, Willie Nelson.
Willie's still kicking.
He's still kicking. He's 89 years old.
It's that lettuce that he's got. It's the devil's lettuce.
Yeah. Number three, I don't think she's playing or singing anymore. In fact, I wonder how she's doing. Loretta Lynn is 90. Loretta Lynn, the coal miner's daughter.
Didn't she just die?
I thought she was. Did she just die?
I don't know.
I might have missed it.
Somebody up along there. No.
I think I'm thinking of Wilson.
No. I got to look.
Okay. Well, let's take a look. Number two, I hope this guy's still alive. He'd be 95 if he is. Harry Belafonte.
Wow.
95 years old. Remember Deo and all that?
Yeah.
All right. Well, now, hey, we went through this pretty quickly.
Yeah, that's because
you're
Rushing.
The Banana Boat song, yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I want you to tell me, Ed, who you think is the oldest living musician. Don't you look.
I'm not.
All right.
I was thinking like Stevie Wonder or somebody like that. I don't know.
Are you crazy?
No. Am I crazy?
No, it's not Stevie. I'll give you one more guess.
God, I don't know.
Let me give you a real big guess.
All right.
He's in the same kind of musical, philosophy as Frank Sinatra.
Frank Sinatra. I don't know.
Okay. Roll the drum.
And by the way, Loretta Lynn is still alive. She's 90 years old.
Thank God.
Yeah.
Please roll the drum. I left my heart in San Francisco. Now, do you know who that is supposed to be? Tony Bennett.
Yes.
96.
Yeah.
96 years old. I think he might still be trying to sing, but not
much. I think he did a special a year ago or 2 years ago.
Yeah, he's not the same.
Katy Perry or something like that.
Yeah. Anyway, thank you so very much for being with us. We will indeed be back on Monday. In the meantime, be careful out there and remember the freedom works.
WTAN Clearwater
FM 106.1
WDCF Dade City
FM 102.3
WZHR Zephyr Hills
FM 104.3
Listen.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Zoom.
I'm Steve Kathan. The government says employers shook off recession.